This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Classes were supposed to start again today, and instead we had police in riot gear with water cannons, with rubber bullets, and with tear gas, and very angry students throwing rocks.
That's VOA correspondent Anita Powell in Johannesburg reporting on today's university student protest. We'll have full details coming up. Also, Democratic Party presidential candidate Hillary Clinton and her Republican opponent Donald Trump faced off in a tense debate last night in St. Louis, Missouri. Many American leaders say Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump will likely stick to his promise to ban Muslims from entering the U.S. and stop the entry of Syrian refugees. And many people in Zimbabwe are struggling economically because the country's been severely affected by cash shortages. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, student protest turned violent again today in South Africa. Students at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg threw stones at police while police fired tear gas and water cannons at the demonstrators. Classes were scheduled to resume this morning at the university known as Wits. It had been closed due to ongoing protest over school fees. VOA's Anita Powell went to the Wits campus to cover the reopening of classes and found herself in the middle of the violence. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua about it.
I arrived to an unexpected scene. Classes were supposed to start again today, and instead we had police in riot gear with water cannons, with rubber bullets, and with tear gas, and very angry students throwing rocks. And this showdown went on for quite a few hours. It just ebbed and flowed with students throwing rocks, police firing back with tear gas and rubber bullets. I met with some injured students, one who had broken his arm, and it was a very chaotic scene.
Any idea how many students were involved?
From where I was, which was near the Great Hall at the University of Witwatersrand, it looked like several hundred students, but it was all very chaotic, and everybody was moving very fast, but I think it's safe to say about several hundred.
When you first arrived, was the violence already underway, or did it erupt after you got there?
It was already underway when I got there. It was a very tense scene, and people were running to and fro. First student I met was somebody who had been shot with a rubber bullet in his shin, and volunteer medics were helping him. And so that was the first thing I saw when I arrived there this morning.
So is it safe to assume that officials closed the university?
This afternoon, we heard from university leadership. They said that their classes were disrupted on two of their campuses. This is two campuses at the University of the Witwatersrand. Several of the classes are continuing today, but they've had pretty low turnout, probably because people were scared away. They've offered to meet with student representatives to discuss the matter, but they say the students haven't taken them up on the offer. And that's been an interesting feature of these discussions. The students have demanded to talk to leadership at the universities, and then they've either not participated in the dialogue or completely refused to reach a compromise. So that indicates that this might go on a bit longer.
Would you summarize the demands of the students?
The students' demands are fairly simple. Most of the students say that they want free education that's subsidized by the government. But the degrees are slightly different. Some students say, okay, we'd be willing to pay a little bit. And some students say, no, it must be free for everybody. And other students say it should be need-based. But the general thrust of the protest is they want education to be less expensive or free for everybody.
And the government reaction to these demands?
What they did to spark the protest this year was they basically turned it right back on the universities and said, oh, well, it's up to you to decide how much you want to raise fees. As the students say, they wash their hands of the matter. The university has said we can't afford to educate students for free unless we have more help from the government, hence the impasse.
That's VOA correspondent Anita Powell from Johannesburg. She spoke with Joe DiCapua. Democratic Party presidential candidate Hillary Clinton and her Republican opponent Donald Trump faced off in a tense debate last night in St. Louis, Missouri, the second of three presidential debates. The debate was held amid a growing chorus of Republicans who want Trump to quit the race after the release of a videotape in which he made offensive remarks about women. But as VOA national correspondent Jim Malone reports, Trump was aggressive from the start.
The tension was evident from the start as the candidates dispensed with the traditional opening handshake. Trump sought to apologize for vulgar references to women on an 11-year-old videotape.
Yes, I'm very embarrassed by it. I hate it, but it's locker room talk, and it's one of those things.
Clinton cited the tape as evidence that Trump is not fit to be president, and the latest in a long list of insulting comments targeting women, Latinos, and Muslims.
So this is who Donald Trump is. And the question for us, the question our country must answer, is that this is not who we are.
Trump kept on the attack throughout the debate, calling Clinton a liar and, at one point, the devil. He also criticized her again for her use of a private email server while she was Secretary of State.
If I win, I am going to instruct my attorney general to get a special prosecutor to look into your situation, because there has never been so many lies.
Everything he just said is absolutely false, but I'm not surprised.
Really?
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah. Because you'd be in jail.
Clinton hammered away at Trump's proposed Muslim ban, while Trump said his plan had changed.
We are not at war with Islam, and it is a mistake, and it plays into the hands of the terrorists to act as though we are.
It's called extreme vetting. We are going to areas like Syria, where they're coming in by the tens of thousands because of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton.
And the two also clashed over Syria and Russia, with Clinton alleging that Russia favors Trump.
Russia has decided that it's all in Syria, and they've also decided who they want to see become president of the United States, too, and it's not me.
I don't know, Putin. I think it would be great if we got along with Russia, because we could fight ISIS together, as an example.
The only positive note came at the end, when a voter asked the candidates to say something nice about each other, which they did.
His children are incredibly able and devoted, and I think that says a lot about Donald.
I will say this about Hillary. She doesn't quit. She doesn't give up. I respect that.
Clinton and Trump meet for a third and final debate in Las Vegas on October 19th. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Jim. Well, many Muslim American leaders say Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump will likely stick to his promise to ban Muslims from entering the U.S. and stop the entry of Syrian refugees. They say his campaign is built on spreading fear of Islam and Muslims. On the other hand, they say rival Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton would probably work to improve U.S. relations with the Muslim world. Radwan Masmoudi is the president of the Center for the Study of Islam and Democracy in Washington, D.C. Reporter Mohammed El-Shanawi asked him why Islamophobia is on the rise during the U.S. presidential campaign.
Well, I think this is a phenomenon that we have been seeing not only in America but also in Europe, which is, of course, can be explained by the rise of ISIS and violent extremism in many countries, by the recent terrorist attacks in many countries. But unfortunately, it is also creating a backlash. It is creating some kind of extremist views and discrimination against Arabs and Muslims in general in the West, in Europe and the United States. And we are seeing the rise of the extreme right-wing groups in the U.S. and in Europe, extreme racism, bigotry, hatred of immigrants in general, and especially of Arabs and Muslims in particular. And Trump is basically riding on this wave of anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant feeling that we have in the United States and in Europe. And Trump is trying to benefit from the sphere, but there is also a huge machine behind it, media, to inflame the situation and to make people even more afraid of Arabs and Muslims.
So if Republican candidate Donald Trump becomes the next president of the United States, would he stick to his promise to ban Muslims from coming to the U.S. and stop welcoming Syrian refugees because he considers both of them security threats?
Yes, I think he has made it very clear that he intends to stick to those promises, and I think he will do so. Those are the two main ideas that his whole campaign is running on, and people are voting for him based on those promises. So I have no doubt that if he becomes president, that he will try to enact those laws, banning refugees from Syria and banning visitors from any Muslim country. Of course, he himself has said that he will make some exceptions, meaning for diplomats, for business people who are coming, an official business. But the number of visitors and the number of Muslims entering the United States will be drastically reduced to a very, very small number. And I think he will do that in order to show that he is serious in fighting terrorism and extremism and all that. So I think it'll have major repercussions on relations between the U.S. and the Muslim world, and even on the rights of minorities and Arab Americans and Muslim Americans here in the United States.
So, on the other hand, what do you expect from the Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton for the Arab and Muslim world if she becomes the next American president?
Well, I think that if Hillary Clinton becomes next president, she will continue basically the policy of the United States of welcoming refugees and welcoming visitors from the Muslim world. She will work to improve relations with the Muslim world, as she has done in the past. Of course, fighting terrorism will also remain a top priority on the agenda of the Hillary Clinton administration. But I think she understands very well that the terrorists are a very small and tiny minority, and that the United States needs the majority of Muslims and Muslim countries to be on the side of the United States in the fight against violent extremism and terrorism, and that it would be extremely dangerous to alienate Muslims all over the world in the name of fighting terrorism, because I think this will create even more extremism in the Muslim world, and it will reinforce the idea that Daesh and ISIS has been trying to promote for many years, which is that the West is against Islam, that the West hates Islam, and that there is a war against Islam. If Trump becomes president, I think it will be the best gift that ISIS has received in many, many years, and even Al-Qaeda has received in many, many years, because it will reinforce their message of a war between Islam and the West.
That's Radwan Masmoudi of the Center for the Study of Islam and Democracy in Washington, D.C. He was speaking with reporter Mohammed Elshenawy. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 18 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Students at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg threw stones at police and fired tear gas and water cannons at the demonstrators. Democratic Party presidential candidate Hillary Clinton and her Republican opponent Donald Trump faced off in a tense debate last night in St. Louis, Missouri, amid a growing chorus of Republicans who want Trump to quit the race after the release of a videotape in which he made offensive remarks about women. And many Muslim American leaders say Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump will likely stick to his promise to ban Muslims from entering the U.S. and stop the entry of Syrian refugees. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Many people in Zimbabwe are struggling economically because the country's been severely affected by cash shortages. Those with money in their bank accounts are rushing to withdraw their cash ahead of the planned introduction of bond notes by the country's central bank. We get more on the story from VOA's Frank Chikawori in Harare.
Plans by Zimbabwe Central Bank Governor John Mangungwa to introduce bond notes as an export incentive at the end of October have triggered speculation that authorities are planning to reintroduce the Zimbabwean dollar through the back door. Some depositors, such as 27-year-old Audrey Munemo of Harare, are now waking up as early as 4 a.m. to join long queues at local banks with the hope of being able to access their money amid worsening cash shortages.
I've been here in the queue at the bank for about 4 hours. Ever since morning, I was just here, and the banks are saying that they don't have money. And I was just trying to withdraw my money before these bond notes start circulating, because we don't know what these authorities are planning to do.
In the countryside, some villagers such as Gilbert Nyikadzino of Zvimba District in President Robert Mugabe's home province of Mashonaland West are now engaging in barter trade in order to earn their keep.
We are having a serious cash crisis, especially here in the rural areas, whereby we are now resorting to barter trade. For example, if I want, let's say, millimeal, I'm now taking my livestock, small livestock like goats, to exchange for that millimeal. The situation is so dire in Zimbabwe, and we are in serious trouble due to liquidity challenges.
But the central bank chief says there is no reason for Zimbabweans to panic. Mangunjika says the proposed bond notes would be backed by a $200 million facility provided by the Africa Export and Import Bank. The Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe governor says Zimbabwe, after adopting the use of multiple currencies in 2008, when the country's inflation reached the 500 billion percent mark, would continue to use foreign currencies such as the American dollar and the South African rand until such a time when Zimbabwe's economic situation has improved for the Southern African country to reintroduce its own currency.
The purpose of bond notes is to deal with an incentive for exporters. But I think people are now confusing that the bond notes are coming here to cater for cash shortages. No, there's no relationship. This is an export incentive scheme.
Economist Prosper Chitambara, who works with the Labour and Economic Research Institute of Zimbabwe, says Zimbabwe's cash crisis is a result of Harare's misplaced priorities and laws that scare away potential investors, such as the Indigenization Act that compels foreign-owned businesses to cede at least 51% of their shareholding to black Zimbabweans. Chitambara tells VOA that Harare should ensure that it cuts its expenditure and focus more on improving the supply side of the economy in order to grow the country's economy.
We also need to rationalize the structure of our government so that it's in line, number one, with the size of the population of Zimbabwe and also with the size of the economy of Zimbabwe. And that could entail, for example, reducing the cabinet itself, reducing parliament, firing deputy ministers, reducing our embassies, especially in those countries that are not strategic in terms of our trade and economic relations with them.
For his part, Zimbabwe's 92-year-old strongman, Robert Mugabe, who has ruled Zimbabwe since 1980, says his government will do all it can to improve foreign direct investment inflows. Mr. Mugabe's nephew, Patrick Juao, who presides over the indigenization law as minister, recently threatened to use the law to force some foreign-owned banks, such as Standard Chartered and Barclays, to cede their shareholding. Mr. Mugabe told Parliament Thursday that his government would relax the Black Empowerment Law that critics say is deterring investment. Recently, some anti-government protesters marched in the capital, calling on authorities to hold their plans to introduce the bond notes, but the protests were crushed by heavily armed police, who went on to impose a blanket ban on demonstrations in Harare. Frank Chikowore, VOA News, Harare.
Burundi says it's beginning the process of withdrawing from the International Criminal Court. The move comes after several UN bodies announced they would look into political violence in the country. Moses Havayarimana reports from Bujumbura.
6 months ago, the International Criminal Court prosecutor Fatou Bensouda announced the launching of the preliminary examination into the post-election killings in Burundi. She said the alleged crimes, including reports of killings, disappearances, torture and rape, fall within the jurisdiction of the court. Meanwhile, in early October, the UN Human Rights Council said it would set up a commission of inquiry into the killings. In September, a report of the United Nations Independent Investigation on Burundi recommended that the commission's findings be shared with the Security Council for possible targeted sanctions and other judicial action. It said, besides the inquiry, should also look into the cross-border armed groups and the potential involvement of other states. Now, the government of President Pierre Nkurunziza is taking action against criticism by the United Nations and the threats of judicial actions by the international community. Bujumbura has announced it will begin the process of withdrawing from the International Criminal Court. The move echoes threats by other African governments, who say the ICC is a Western body whose prosecutions are focused mostly on African leaders. Gaston Sindimo is the first vice president of Burundi. He says no one can stay quiet about the injustice that is being done by the colonial countries against the African countries. He says Burundian citizens believe it's no longer necessary for the country to remain as a member of the international court. In Bujumbura, lawyer Fabien Segatwa says that the country won't benefit from withdrawing from the International Criminal Court. He says the government's decision comes at a bad time because recent reports by the United Nations allege crimes against humanity. He says even if the government rejects the report, the allegations will always be there. Crimes against humanity are penalized everywhere in the world. Segatwa says Burundi's intention to withdraw from the Rome Statute that established the ICC sends a signal that the acts were likely committed and the government is afraid they will be revealed. While the ruling party and the government are critical of outside investigations into the violence, Burundi's opposition supports international scrutiny. Leonce Ngendakumana is the chairman of FRODEBU, a political party in Burundi. He says opposition in the country welcomes the commission so they can come and share that information with the government and its critics. Ngendakumana says that the government and the opposition accuse each other of being behind the killings and disappearances. He asks that if the government has nothing to hide, why does it reject the commission? The government of Burundi accuses the European Union of being behind the UN Human Rights Report and that it aims to destabilize the country. Bujumbura says the investigators are biased and the reports are not accurate. Moses Habyarimana for VOA Africa in Bujumbura, Burundi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Dan Crafton, thanks for choosing the Voice of America. On the next Trade Talk Africa,
Political talks in the Democratic Republic of Congo have resumed after being suspended weeks ago following 2 days of deadly protests on the streets of Kinshasa. We'll discuss the latest developments in the DRC next on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.